Good evening, and welcome to Relationship Revelations with Sheila Grace Harvey. And I was hesitating then because I realized in Los Angeles it might be good evening, but it's the afternoon where I am in New Zealand, and some of you in different places of the world will have different times. So welcome to another show, and today we're going to be talking about a subject about death and dying. And before some of you go, ooh, because it is a subject that we tend to not want to address or whatever, but I've got some really nice things about it that would maybe shift some of your perceptions to make it a little bit more of an easier thing to deal with. And one of the things that I did this week was I found this article from Mellon Thomas Benedict, who was an artist who survived a near-death experience in 1982. And he, in fact, was dead for an hour and a half, then rose up out of his body and went into the light. And it's a wonderful story and what he learned and some of the things that happened to him. And I just thought that I would share that with you today, because I think it's quite inspirational. It's one of these things, you know how, you know, on the email it's really easy to send out to everybody that you know. And this was one thing that I sent out, and I was getting really tremendous feedback from people saying it was really impactful, thank you very much, it couldn't have been at a better time for me, and often I send things out and never hear back. So I think this might be something that you will enjoy, and it's rather long, so I'm actually only going to sort of, you know, just read little bits of it so that give you the gist of it. But basically, he, in 1982, he had terminal cancer, it was non-operable, and he'd only be given 6 to 8 months to live. And he says, I had become increasingly despondent over the nuclear crisis, the ecology crisis, and so forth. I came to believe that nature had made a mistake, that we were probably a cancerous organism on the planet, and that is what eventually killed me. He said, before my death, I tried all sorts of alternative healing methods and none helped. So I determined that this was between me and God. I had never really considered God, but my approaching death sent me on a quest for more information about spirituality and alternative healing. So what happened next was he ended up in a hospice, and he lasted for another 18 months. And one morning he woke up about 4:30, and he knew that this was it. And he asked his carer, Anne, you know, let her know that he was, he let her know that when he died, he didn't want anyone to disturb the body for a number of hours, because he had heard that when the body dies, it goes through some interesting things. So, you know, he'd asked that would happen. So what he did was he left the body. And he said, I'll continue reading. He says, a light shone. As I moved towards the light, I knew that if I went into the light, I would be dead. So I said or felt, please wait. I would like to talk to you before I go. The entire experience halted. I discovered that I was in control of the entire experience. My request was honored. I had conversations with the light. I asked in a kind of telepathy, what's going on here? The information transmitted was that our beliefs shape the kind of feedback we receive. If you are a Buddhist or a Catholic or a fundamentalist, you get a feedback loop of your own images. I became aware of a higher self matrix, a conduit to the source. We all have a higher self or an oversoul part of our being, a conduit. All higher selves are connected as one being. All humans are connected as one being. We are literally the same being. It was the most beautiful thing I have ever seen. It was like all the love you've ever wanted, and it was the kind of love that cures, heals, regenerates. I was ready to go at that time, so I said, I am ready. Take me. And the light turned into the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. I just cannot say enough about how it changed my opinion of human beings in an instant. I said, thought, or felt, oh God, I didn't realize. I was astonished to find that there was no evil in any soul. People may do terrible things out of ignorance and lack, but no soul is evil. What all people seek, what sustains them, is love. That's what the light told me. What distorts people is a lack of love. The revelations went on and on. I asked, does this mean that humankind will be saved? And the light spoke, saying, you save, redeem, and heal yourself. You always have and always will. You were created with the power to do so from before the beginning of the world. In that instant, I realized that we've already been saved, and this is what the second coming is all about. So he goes through, at this point, he talks about traveling through, the different solar systems, galaxies and things. And he says, I learned that this galaxy and all of the universe is bursting with many different varieties of life. I saw many worlds. We are not alone in this universe. I could perceive forever beyond infinity. I was in the void, pre-creation, the beginning of time, the first word of vibration. I rested in the eye of creation, and it seemed that I touched the face of God. It was not a religious feeling. I was simply at one with absolute life and consciousness. I rode the stream directly into the center of light, and the truth was obvious that there is no death, that nothing is born and nothing dies, that we are immortal beings, part of a natural living system that recycles itself endlessly. And he says that he knew he would come back. And he says, so to be human is part of God. It is a blessing beyond our wildest estimation of what blessing can be. For each and every one of us to be the human part of this experience is awesome and magnificent. Each and every one of us, no matter where we are, screwed up or not, is a blessing to the planet right where we are. So he comes back into the body, and he has. They estimate that he was dead for approximately about an hour and a half, which is quite a long time. And it took a little bit of adjustment, because as he came back into the body and he fell on the floor, and it's taken him a while. It took him a while to kind of be able to recall a lot of his experiences. And he says, but from my return, I could find nothing wrong with any human being I had ever seen. Previous to my death, I was judgmental, believing that people were really screwed up, everybody but me. And in the next part, he talks about a friend says to him, well, why don't you go and get tested and see whether you still have cancer in your body? And this was about 3 months later than he came back. And when they checked him, he had no cancer. He says, since my return, I have experienced the light spontaneously, and I have learned how to get to that space almost any time in my meditation. You can also do this. You do not have to die first. You are wired for it already. We don't need to commune with God. God is communing with us in every moment. So I asked God, what is the best religion on the planet? Which one is right? God said with great love, I don't care. What an incredible grace. It does not matter what religion we are. Religions come and they go, they change. Buddhism has not been here forever. Catholicism has not been here forever. And they are all about to become more enlightened. More light is coming into all systems now. Many will resist and fight about it, one religion against the next, believing that only they are right. When God had said, I don't care, I understood it is for us to care about, because we are the caring beings. The source doesn't care if you're Protestant, Buddhist, or Jew. Each is a reflection, a facet of the whole. I wish that all religions would realize it, and let each other be. It's not the end of separate religions, but live and let live. Each has a different view, and it all adds up to the big picture. He said, I went over to the other side with lots of fears about toxic waste and a whole lot of other things, and I came back loving every single problem, because he recognized that everything brought us to a new level of consciousness. So I read quite a bit there, which I wouldn't normally do, but I just thought that was really rather wonderful in his description of everything. That so there's nothing really to fear, and I think most people, you know, if you've ever read anything about people who have died and come back, they always talk about the wonderful light, and it's always a wonderful, wonderful experience. And yet, despite that, most people have got a fear about themselves dying and find it extremely difficult to be around people who are going through the transition. And if you think about it, when a baby is born, everyone's very joyful and happy, and it's just the most terrific thing, and people celebrate, and it's wonderful at this gorgeous new life coming on the planet. And yet when somebody leaves the planet, it's a graduation that they've graduated from this life. And that really is also a celebration, because what they're going to is really beautiful and loving and a lot easier than being on the planet and being on Earth. And yet, mostly, we don't know how to deal with people. And there is always the grief, of course, because we, you know, we love somebody. You know, there is a void in our life. So, of course, we're grieving for ourselves. But for the person that goes over to the other side, it really could be just a joyful time. I think the Irish do it really well when they have a wake to celebrate the life. And I think that's a really lovely way to do that. When you think back, sort of a century or wherever ago, you know, there weren't all the hospitals and the hospices. And so basically, if people were sick or dying, they were always at home and they were cared for by the family and the community. And yet now, when people are terminal, they're basically in hospitals, hospices, you know, nursing homes. It's very, very rarely at home. And people are living much longer. And so things that might have in the past, allowed somebody to move over to the other side. Now, you know, there's so much in medicine that can keep people alive. So a lot of the diseases that people would have died from now, they don't. And so usually it's kind of coming down a lot more to really cancer and heart disease, because people are probably living longer than they've ever done. So it just means that most of us don't have a direct experience of caring for the ill or experience of death. I think my first experience of death would have been my grandmother, and she... No, actually, it was my grandfather before my grandmother. My grandfather, I was about 11 or 12. And I remember that only because I was called into the headmistress's office and she told me. And I think I remember at the time that it got me out of a test in the classroom. So I was kind of, on the one hand, jubilant, and at the other, kind of didn't, I hadn't experienced death, so it kind of really didn't sink in. And I didn't really have another experience of death of someone close to me till my mother died when I was about 27. And then that was really quite a shocking experience for me. So, you know, we're not necessarily have a lot of experience. And so being of service to others and being able to be there for people who are just sick, or whether it is, you know, they're at that last phase before they go over onto the other side, it's, you know, what can we do to assist them? Because it can really, really, really be a tremendous blessing when we can come in a very balanced, loving place to really hold the loving and light for somebody at this particular time. And, you know, it's finding out what they need. I think it's very easy for us to do or to say what we think people need rather than what they actually need. And it was something that early on I had to learn, because I thought I knew what people needed. And, you know, that's kind of, I guess, one of the arrogance of being younger. But what I have learned is that what is it that this person in front of me really, really needs? And how can I come into my loving and be there for them? So whether they want to be touched, or whether they just need somebody to listen to them, or whether they want someone just to kind of make light talk and have some fun with them so that they can, you know, just, you know, think about something different for a little while. Some people might want you to pray with them, and, you know, you can, if you're not sure what to say, then you know, as I've often done, we can just call in the light and ask for that light to be present for the highest good. And, you know, just whatever's appropriate for them at that time. You might plant a beautiful column of light if it's in a hospital or in a home, by planting a column of light from the highest heaven through you, through the building to the center of the earth. That's assisting with that light energy for all the people in the area, and especially for the person that you're working with. You can ask for assistance. Ask God. Ask, you know, whoever it is that you want, the Christ, whoever it is, to just assist with the healing and loving and light at this time for the highest good. And it really is about just letting go of any judgments of the person, because at this point they don't need any angst when they're going through things. They're dealing with enough, and maybe they just need to be listened to. Sometimes they need to get some things off their chest, and it may be that it's not about you, but they may need to do it about someone else so that they can release it, be free in themselves. And, you know, none of us necessarily know what that individual has to do to complete the soul's journey before they leave the body. And I know, because a friend of mine recently died, and I know she was in a lot of pain before she died. And on the one hand, you know, we don't want to see anyone in pain, and she obviously was on medication, but she was on medication, because not everybody, of course, does that. But most people, I think, these days go on some kind of medication towards the end. But sometimes that is a time when there is a lot of purifying when there is pain at that end time before the body leaves. And sometimes people are in a coma for a while, and that's another opportunity to release things and to clean up some karma. So unfortunately, we don't know what a person's karma is. So it's about trusting in many respects that, you know, God knows. And John Rogers always said, he says, we need to remember that no one passes from this life unless the higher self and the soul of the person agree to their leaving. So, I mean, this is between the person really and God. So no soul, you know, is going to leave before its time. So essentially, once you know that it's in God's hands, it's just give it over. Give this person, give this soul over to God and allow God to handle it. And just be there in loving service. And it's a wonderful, wonderful blessing to be able to do that. So let them complete. I've known people who 10, 20 years later from somebody dying feels regret because they felt they didn't make peace with that person. They didn't tell them they loved them. They didn't say the things that they really wanted to say to them. And just know that, you know, you can go inside and you can complete with that person. In fact, why don't we do that right now? Because there's no time like the present when something comes up. So just go inside right now into your heart, and we'll just ask for the Father, Mother, God to be present. We ask for the light and loving of the Christ, with the compassion for the light, the loving, to be with all of us right this moment now. And as you touch into that, into your heart, you can just bring forward those people in soul that you feel incomplete with. So whether it's your mother, your father, or even both of them, just one at a time, bring that person forward in your heart. And just inwardly, you can just share and say to them what you feel you need to say to them. And as you're doing that, you might see if they have anything to say to you. And now maybe there's someone else that you want to talk to and do the same process with, or you might still stay with the same one. And right now you can just thank them and bring your attention back into your heart again. And just take a moment to see whether there is anything else that's outstanding. Because if there is anything that you feel that you put between you and your loving and the loving of God, and the loving of those that have passed over, then it's a good idea just to do some forgiveness. It's I forgive myself for judging myself and for holding anything against myself. Or I forgive myself for judging myself. And just take a moment to forgive anything you've been holding against yourself. Maybe there are judgments you've held against those that have gone over. In which case it might be, I forgive myself for judging, and then whatever the person's name is, for whatever it was. Just know that at any time you can continue and do this process. All you have to do is call in the light and come into your heart. And you can just share from your heart what's going on. And then you can do the forgiveness of the judgments. Because it's the judgments that keep us holding on to things. And you know what? It's a good idea to let them go. It doesn't support us to keep judging ourselves and others. At some point, we have to let them go, come back into our loving, and move on. So just know that you are loved, and that those that have passed over are in a really loving place. And the best way for them to move on is for you to be more loving about yourself, so they can let go of any concerns. And you can let go of any concerns now because they're taken care of. And right now, if you have anyone in your life that is not well, anyone who's going through any difficulties, you can just place them in the light for the highest good, for assistance and grace. And healing and love and light. And just take a deep breath in. And let it go, and just, you can just open your eyes when you're ready. And just know that at any time, you can just come into your heart and call in that light and just give over any concerns and worries. Because one of the things when you're around people that are experiencing difficulties or health challenges, you know, it really, really would assist them not to come in fear or distress or feeling hurt or with judgment. Because what you don't want is for them to use energy feeling like they have to console you and make you feel better. So it's really about really coming into that loving place. And the friend of mine that I've mentioned that died recently, another friend and myself went to visit her, and we were sitting in the car outside. And what we did before we went in to see her is we called in the light, and we asked that we could just really come into a place with our energy that would just totally love and support her, that we would just let go of anything, you know, within ourselves, so that we didn't bring any concerns or anything from ourselves or, you know, the outside world, as it were, into her home, that we could come into a place of peace and loving within ourselves, so that we could really love and support and nurture and be there for her for whatever it was that she needed. And we also had an intention that it would be just a very joyful and a lovely visit for her, and that whatever she needed, she would get. And we had no idea, really, whether we were going to be there for 2 minutes to see her or longer, because it was very much up to her. And when we got in there, and she was so happy to see us, and I was delighted to see her, because she's been a wonderful friend, and of course I've lived, living in different countries to her. And we just had the most joyful visit, and we were able to just have a lot of fun and be there. And then we did some prayer communion for her, which was kind of like just praying and just kind of, kind of not actually hands on the body, but just kind of placing our hands over different parts of her body, just to, for a little kind of allowing God to bring some healing through. And it was just, really lovely. And I did see her very briefly for a couple of minutes once after that time, before I left the States. And what I have in my heart as she went over was this memory of somebody who I had this most delightful time with. So, it's part of what we can bring to visiting people, that we can bring some love and some light and some joy. And, when you really think about it, we have this lifetime on Earth, and it really is just a blink of an eye in the overall scheme of things. It's a place where we can work things out, where we can work through our karmic conditions, and really we just need to be patient. What's that old expression? He wins who endures to the end. So I want to do another quote here from John Roger. This is from... got a wonderful book called Fulfilling Your Spiritual Promise. It's actually 3 volumes, and it has a lot of information on so many different topics. It's kind of like a reference guide, but it has quite a lot of information in it. And he's talking here about death. He says, once a person has experienced soul travel and the other levels in a deep way, death takes on a different meaning for them. And it is seen not as something final in the ultimate sense, but as a moving on to what is next for them. They realize that they existed before they were born into this level, and that they will continue to exist after they die from this level. Until you have that experience, you may have some fear of dying. This is because most of us have died physically many times, and it has often been in a state of unawareness, and therefore fear. When you have a fear of death, part of what you are dealing with are your past deaths, where you lacked the understanding of the spiritual levels and consequently feared physical death. The antidote is to love it all, including the fear, and to do spiritual exercises, and that's a form of active meditation with a chant, to become more aware of yourself as multidimensional and as one who has always lived and will always live, one who never dies. So what we're looking at is how to assist people and, treat people how you probably like to be treated if, you were at a time where you're going through something. My father, just a few years back, when he was ill and passed over, I actually was living in Australia, so I flew home a couple of times to see him. And the second time that I went, I thought I was actually going to be staying, because I knew that he had lung cancer, and I knew that, from the doctors, that it probably was only a question of time. And I was just really willing to give up what I was doing and just be there for him. I guess what I felt in my heart really was, you think of our parents and all they gave up in many respects, all those years bringing myself and my sister up, and it's kind of like there's a, as I see mothers with children, I do think I get into a real place of awe in many respects, because so many parents are so committed and willing to do what they need to do for that child. And, it's some huge sacrifices that parents make. And I know that my parents made an enormous amount of sacrifices for us. And, that's something that I think, it's something that most of them do without thinking about it. So I kind of thought, when it gets to the other end of the equation, when you know, in a way, even in the last few days, my father kind of regressed more like a child, where I was the one having to be more like the parent and take care of him, that it was the least that I felt that I could do. And I had the experience when my mother died, when I was in Australia, and by the time I got on, that I was able to book a flight to go back, when I heard that she'd had these major heart attacks, I was too late. She was already dead before I got on the plane. And I think there was always that place in me that, you know, was really, you know, sad that I never actually got to say goodbye to her, which is why, you know, doing that kind of thing of going into your heart and being able to talk, I think, is really important, because I know that she has heard me, and I know that she knows that I really love her and all that she has done. And once you know that, there is a much greater peace that, you know, that comes into our heart over that. And a lot of healing of the heart takes place. And with my father, I think my father knew that if anything happened, I would get on a plane and come over. And I think that there is nothing more wonderful for a parent to know that as a child that you are there for them. And in the reverse, of course, is true. And but the time that I went, the second time I went to stay with him, and I thought I was going to stay, and he was like, well, how long are you staying for? And I recognized that he didn't realize, or had not, or he was in denial about the fact that he knew that he was going to die. And I thought, if I stay, he's going to know he's sicker. So I basically stayed for a short time, and then I left. And then I got a call. It was only a couple of months later, I got a call from one of the neighbors who sort of said to me, look, he's getting to the point now, he just really can't take care of himself. And they had been kind of helping out, and they were going actually away for 10 days. And if they hadn't, you know, I might not have got the call, but because they knew that they couldn't look after him, they phoned me and said, look, he's going to need some taking care of. So I basically got on a plane, went home, and which is, I always kind of, it's funny how you kind of always consider your parents' place home. I always did, that this was my home, really. Wherever I went in the world and wherever I've traveled, it always felt like the place that was home. And, you know, I arrived there, and you know, he had just in the last, kind of literally the last week, gotten into the place where he was not really totally able to take care of himself. And I was very grateful in a way that it was only a, such a short piece of time that he was like that, because my father was quite a proud man. And, you know, he'd been a man that in business had had a lot of staff and a lot of responsibility. And, you know, he's been the head of the household, as it were. And it's very, very hard for people when they're used to that to suddenly have to ask people for assistance and for help. And he would have been mortified. That was the kind of man that he was. And that was something that, you know, I grew up with, feeling mortified for asking anyone to help. So I've had to learn over the time to basically ask for assistance, because I really believe that, you know, we're all here to forgiving and receiving and assisting each other and assisting ourselves. So so anyway, it was lovely to be there for the last few days. And, you know, being that kind of British, you know, stiff upper lip, you know, my, you know, sort of occasional peck on the cheek was about the closest that one got to one. You see, I've already reverted now back to the British, you know, one did and one was. One only pecked on the cheek, one did. And so at one point, I remember my father was sitting in the chair, and I went up and I just put my hand on one of his hands. And I said, are you okay, Dad? And he put his hand on my hand, and he said, yes. And I think that's probably the closest to my father has probably ever gotten to saying how much he loved me. But it was like I knew the loving was present. And that was really quite precious. And what I noticed just in the last few days, he wasn't eating very much. And that's often, I think, a pattern with people as they're on their way to transitioning. They eat less. And he started wanting things like, my mother used to make a fruit salad, but she used to do it in a very specific way, which is a bit different than most people do it. And so he said, I want a fruit salad. So I made him that. And then one day he wanted fish and chips. And it was kind of almost like he was doing his last orders, as it were, on the final countdown, as I heard somebody say today. And just, you know, before he died, I was trying to get him up to bed, and I ended up with him on the top of the stairs, and I couldn't move him. And so I just kind of sat there, and I was just chanting. And I did that for a little while and tried to assist him. And in the end, I couldn't move him, and I had to call the paramedics. And by the time I had called the paramedics, he'd actually just died. He'd just gone. So it is an amazing experience to be able to be there for somebody and be there in loving. And I'm glad in a way that I have such tremendous faith, basically from all the work that I have done with, you know, John Rogers and the movement of spiritual inner awareness. And it doesn't really matter what it is that we all do. It's really about knowing and connecting and knowing that there's life after death and knowing that this is not the end and knowing that this, you know, whoever is going over will be perfectly taken care of and loved and welcomed. And then it just basically leaves us to deal with our grief. And one of the things that was fascinating to me was that in the time up to the funeral, and my father died literally just coming into Good Friday. So of course it were public holidays and things. So it was about a week, I think, before we actually had the funeral service. And in that time, there was just so much to do and people to let know and organize and all of the things that had to be done. And people were like, what can I do? And it's wonderful and I'm here for you. And then what I experienced, as soon as the funeral was over, everybody disappeared into the woodwork. There was nobody, even people who had said, and there was just about, you know, just about really just one or two people who'd been really quite close to Dad, who, if I called on them, were available, but most other people I recognized were saying that because they wanted to feel like they were doing something, but in actual fact, most people do not know how to talk to somebody who's just had somebody die. And one of the services that I like to do is, especially within our particular organization, we actually have a thing around the world, we send out like a heart reach list of people who are, you know, in real need of love and light, and some people want, you know, prayer communion, and some people, you know, love to receive letters and cards and things like that. But I recognize that once somebody has died and the funeral has happened, then there's nothing going on. That is the time when people actually need support the most. Because once the organization of the funeral and all of that has happened, there's nothing going on. So now you're left with this void. Now, for me, it probably wasn't as difficult for many people because it wasn't like I was living there and now someone in the house where I've lived, a part of my family has died. I lived overseas and basically spoke to my father kind of periodically on the telephone and occasionally came back for visits. But so there was this kind of like there suddenly becomes this huge void. You're alone in, you know, and even being there at that time, I was alone in the house. And because I didn't live there, you know, I was spent a lot of time alone, and it was amazing some of the kind of the stages that I went through, including times where I'd be sitting on the sofa and I'd be kind of numb, and I knew that I needed to eat, but I couldn't get up and go to the fridge and get something. I just couldn't do it, and there are various stages as you go through grief. And it's just really important to allow yourself to go through them, not to judge it, not to feel bad about it, but just to allow it to be what it is. And then, of course, I went through the opposite stage, and that was, you know, I basically couldn't eat enough. And, you know, sort of went back to my childhood of steamed syrup puddings with custard and stuff, all the things that I grew up with, which were like comfort food. So you know, you can go from kind of one extreme to the other. So one of the things that I sometimes do as a service is when this heart reach list comes out, if people have passed over, I wait until I know that the service or whatever, and then I phone up the person and I sort of say, look, you know, this is who I am, and I just say, look, you know, how are you doing? And there's, you know, the times that I have done this, that people are just so thrilled to have someone call them and just ask them how they are. See, I think a lot of times we don't know how to talk to people. And the truth is you don't have to know. You just have to be there for somebody. just, how are you doing? Is there anything you need? And often somebody might just want to talk about what's happened and what they're going through and how they're feeling. And sometimes it doesn't have to be a long phone call. It's just letting somebody know, look, I'm just thinking of you. You know, sending you love and light. And, you know, if you need anything. So, and be there for them, because, you know, there's nothing worse than saying, I'll be there for you, when in actual fact you don't intend to be there for them. So, yeah. So, you know, be sensitive and see what you can do to assist others. And, yeah, it's a beautiful, beautiful service. I looked up about what the Buddhists say about death and dying, and they say, we are alive, therefore we will die. This is the simplest, most obvious truth of our existence, and yet very few of us really come to terms with it. And it says, our body is like a guest house, and our mind like the guest. When we die, our mind has to leave this body and enter the body of our next rebirth, like a guest leaving one guest house and traveling to another. Kind of quite like that one. Sort of puts it in a nice little context. I think a lot of us become fearful around death because we've put a lot of energy into the material, but we're not necessarily putting enough in the spiritual. So once it either comes close to death, or if someone is dying or someone dies, it's kind of a time when we then reflect on our own mortality. And if all we have is fear, then obviously we become fearful to think about death. And often when we're fearful about something, we just don't want to deal with it. I learned quite early on that I actually wasn't scared of death. I was in a 40-foot boat when we were going to the Barrier Reef in Australia, and we collided with a 20,000-ton ship in the middle of the night. And it could have quite easily been the end. And I recognized that I didn't have a fear of dying. And I thought, gosh, that's a really nice thing to know. I don't fear death. And a lot of what I know we do in MSIA, in the Movement of Spiritual Inner Awareness, by doing the spiritual exercises, which are a form of meditation, but using a kind of a mantra, by doing that, and the one that we use, just if anyone's interested, is Anai Hu. H-U is a Sanskrit word for God. You can do Hu, you can do Anai Hu, you H-U. You can just chant that in order to sort of have something to focus on. By doing that, and by, you know, having that kind of closer connection with spirit, then, you know, once you transition out of the body, it's not much of a transition at all. It's like going out of your body and you just go on to something else. So, and the beauty of having a master working with you is the master is there to take you over on the other side, and everything is really easily handled and very graceful. So the other person who's done quite a little bit on death and dying is Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, and I know she certainly has done an awful lot around people who've had near-death experiences, and I think she was one of the earlier people who, you know, found out that most people's experiences were actually very, very similar. And one of the things she says is, those who have the strength and the love to sit with a dying patient in the silence that goes beyond words will know this moment is neither frightening nor painful, but a peaceful cessation of the functioning of the body. So one of the things that she says, actually, that I found actually quite fascinating was she talks about how, you know, and you see this when you watch all of the TV, you know, the kind of the Grey's Anatomies and the ERs and all of those, and somebody's going into, you know, their body's going whatever, and, you know, everyone's doing everything medically, and, you know, the crash carts and, you know, kind of the clear, and they do all those, you know, what do they call those? I was going to call them jump leads, but not really, one of those paddles that they put on the heart and restart it. Anyway, so, you know, she talks about how often medically, even a lot of the people who are dealing with people who are dying still aren't comfortable with the talking. They're them dealing with them medically, but they're not necessarily very comfortable in dealing with them in terms of, you know, maybe just sitting and letting them know what's going on, although I do think that this is improving quite dramatically. And, you know, just kind of being there with a little word for them here, or, you know, just holding their hand, or just really being there for them, which I think is just so important. And she actually does a lot of work now with and a lot of seminars with people and medical staff, so that they can actually also be the human part, because quite honestly, at the end of the day, isn't that more important? It's the loving and the caring more than anything else that we really, really need. And, you know, it's about being able to be holding and loving for somebody as they're going through what they're going, not just medically, you know, what drug do they need, or what do they need to keep them alive, but not that that isn't essential, but also it is about the human touch and that caring. As Christ said, to love one another as I have loved you. And that's a lovely thing to live by, really, isn't it? To love one another as I have loved you. And, of course, the other thing that's kind of an equation, really, in that is to really love ourselves, because it's only really as we truly love ourselves that we're really able to be there and love someone else. So, you know, in terms of, you know, death is just, you know, just one more step, a graduation onto our next level and our next step of progression. And it's actually quite a wonderful thing. And, right, well, what do we need to do to prepare? Because we're a society that doesn't look at death, we don't prepare. So, I mean, I didn't make a will. I think the only will I've ever made was only actually quite a few years ago. But, you know, for a long time, I never had a will. I mean, you think you're going to live forever. You know, we all have this thing, oh, gosh, I don't need to do that. I'm far too young. But in actual fact, it's always good to be prepared so that what you want, you know, happens. Not dying intestate so that, you know, it's sort of either the government takes it or, you know, it's a long, drawn-out thing for those around you. So it's being very clear. I mean, when my father died, his will, I mean, I thought there must have been another will. His will dated back to before my sister and I were born. So that's when my father made the will. So this was, you know, when he was a young man. So, and he never updated it, although it was fine in terms of that it was incredibly relevant, but it's also that often people who do make wills may not update them at times, and then, you know, after they die, it doesn't really go to where they really want the money to go. So it's a little bit about, it's not a bad idea to be a little prepared. And the more we feel good about ourselves, the more we tap into that loving inside of us, the easier it's going to be. So you don't have to wait till you die to know what the experience is. You can experience it while you're alive, so that you can just step into it. So you could make it really easy on yourself. JR says, some people are afraid to die because they don't know what the next step will be. It's loving. When you die, you go straight to the loving. So really, there's not an awful lot to be concerned about. In fact, for a lot of people who don't experience tremendous loving, it may be something to really be pleasant for them to think of, because it is a difficult thing, definitely a difficult thing to think about. And JR says that people studying MSIA are in a way rehearsing for death. By becoming more aware of other levels during spiritual exercises, you can realize that you are more than just your body, emotions, and mind. You can find out there's a great deal more to you than your everyday concerns and worries, more than your hopes, dreams, and relationships on this level. You can have experiences of the spiritual levels, of the inexpressible love and joy there, and you can realize that you are actually love and joy. Now, isn't that nice to know? You are actually love and joy. So, I just wanted to, before I finish today, I've just got a little bit more time here. I wanted to address a question that I've had about forgiveness, because we've touched on that again today. And somebody asked me, I have been doing forgiveness when things show up, but I don't always feel better. Why is that? That's a really good question. And often, when we do forgiveness, sometimes it's a little bit like an onion. We do the forgiveness and we actually kind of start peeling off the layers, but there may be more underneath it. So in other words, you know, we could start off, say, for instance, we've had an ice cream and we're trying to lose weight and we've said we won't have anything with sugar in it or something. So we forgive ourselves for judging ourselves for having the ice cream. And then we forgive ourselves for judging ourselves for not doing what we say we're going to do and keeping our word. And then if we were to keep going on that process, it might be, and I forgive my father, I forgive myself for judging my father for being saying harsh words to me. Because somewhere along there, your father might have gone out with you and bought you an ice cream, and somehow underneath it there are still more layers. So my suggestion is, if you do forgiveness and it still doesn't go, because when you truly forgive, you forget. So if you find yourself in a situation where you've been doing forgiveness and you've been forgiving the judgment, because that's what we're forgiving, then maybe just, you know, out loud, just start the process, just I forgive myself for judging myself for, and then whatever comes up, and then just keep on doing it, like just kind of cycling around. And keep on doing it till nothing else shows up, because sometimes it's something else underneath. And if we keep on cycling it round, then what happens is we'll come to that bottom line of what's really underneath it. And once we forgive that, then it releases. So don't be afraid to keep on doing that, and because otherwise, you know, we might be just really healing some of the what is, you know, just on the top, superficial. So, okay. I had another one, and I'm going to do this. I'm actually going to do this question because I get this a lot when I go out and do seminars and, you know, things like when I go and do keynote speeches on, you know, kind of peace and things like this. I get people coming up to me, so I wanted to address this one. The person says, I am gay and find it hard to reconcile with all the people who hate us and tell us we are evil and will incur the wrath of God. Well, you know, what I normally say to people who come up and say about incurring the wrath of God is basically that their God is a little too small for me, because to me, God loves all of its creation. God, I don't really believe, cares what people do with their appendages. It's not about that, but it is about the loving. God only cares about loving. So if what you are doing is loving, then that's great. If what you're doing isn't loving, it doesn't matter who you're with or what you're doing, then that really is a key to whether something is on track or not. Whether there is loving present. So, you know, I think it's really sad that we're in a situation on this planet where people are ridiculed and pillared and put down, you know, for the color of their skin, for their sexuality, for some of the choices they make in life. I think the most important thing is that are you loving? And if you're loving, you're not hurting anybody else. What goes on between two consenting adults is exactly that. The most important thing is really the loving. So that's the only question you really have to ask yourself. Am I being loving? And for those people who are into judgment, it's like, are you being loving? You know, the whole story of the Good Samaritan in the Bible, and that is that the Samaritan was one of the people at the time who was one of those that was considered an outcast. That story could have been a gay person walked by. It could have been, you know, the good gay person, because the Samaritan was something that a person that a lot of the people in the community shunned. And yet it was this person that when somebody was in need, took care. So that is the story from the Bible. It's about caring for each other no matter what. It's letting go of our prejudices. It's letting go of our judgments. It's letting go of some of the things that really are preconceived ideas and, you know, judgments, thoughts that we've actually been brought up with, or we've taken from movies, or we've taken from people we know, or we've read about. Because when we come in as unconditional loving beings. There is no prejudice. There is no judgment. There is just light, love, and joy. And when we go out again, isn't it wonderful to know that we are returning to that love and light and joy? So my blessing and prayer for you and for all of us is let's be in the light and the joy and the loving now so that we can live blissfully on this planet while we're here until it's time for us to move on. God bless you all. Be'erush Be'Shem.
Hi,